Welcome to theconversation.org, making sense of these times.
Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something good. If I can wait, something's coming. I don't know what it is, but it is gonna be great.
This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org. And now your host, Suzanne Taylor.
I'm sitting here with Pennell Rock, who's a good enough old friend that he and I are thinking about doing this radio show together. So we're experimenting. We're seeing what works, what doesn't work. And he's suggesting that the first show that he might take charge of, you might say, or do by himself even, it has to do with the body. Now, this is not my subject. And now I don't have a terrible body. It isn't that I let it go or anything like that. It just kind of hangs together by itself. And so far, so good. And I don't know very much about not only what else to do or think, but why I would be very interested in all of this. Okay, so Pennell's challenge here is to make this interesting enough that I will become interested. And the first thing he started to do was to give me the outline of some subject matter he's been thinking about. And he was going to say that before we taped this radio show. And I said, as he started, I thought, oh, well, this is even the beginning of getting me, and then thereby you, interested to come along for his ride. So now I'm going to let him go back to where we started a few minutes ago when he started to tell me what it is he's going to be talking about when he really sets up this whole show about the body. Now, the first thing is, it's called What is Yoga? Why is it called What is Yoga?
Well, first of all, this is not my idea. That's very, very erroneous thought, that this is my trip or this is my idea. This is one of the most ancient ideas to come out of India.
Oh, but you've already got me. How can I resist even a little less, more, or whatever? Okay.
All right. And the idea is that our consciousness is not just free-floating out there in the world. It's grounded. It's rooted. It's rooted in our body. It's based in our body. The body is the base of consciousness. And so if you want to improve your consciousness, not to improve it, but to bring it back to its most essential state, to bring it to its highest possible realizations, you have to create a base for this by purifying and caring for the body. So the ancient Hindu yogis discovered that to truly come to the highest possibility of consciousness, you have to bring the body to its highest possibility of development.
Oh dear, I'm in such trouble.
You are blessed with a naturally healthy body. You do not suffer from illnesses. You do not suffer from any chronic problem. And so you are blessed. I am the same.
Nice and slim.
Nice and slim.
Nice and slim.
You and I are the same in that way. You and I are blessed with healthy, slender bodies. And we've had them all of our lives, even to our advanced age. And God bless us, and thank God.
So this is the rest of humanity we're being compassionate toward.
Yes.
All those people out there who aren't as good as us, right?
Well, not as they may not be as fortunate as we are in this regard. You have taken it one way, which is, well, it's just there and it's doing okay, so why fuss with it?
But I am in awe of you and the fact that you do fuss with it. Now, you know, even though I have no kind of, you know, huge draw to mimic you, I am in awe of really what nice care you take, that you keep it brushed up and exercised out and all the good things.
Well, the other thing is that I feel every day that I enjoy good health, I feel more and more grateful for it. It's become a matter of a kind of religious practice for me on my own, that just out of that gratitude, I return the care because I'm so grateful for what I was given.
Oh, that's beautiful, actually.
The older I've gotten, the more that really is my motivation.
Well, that is beautiful. That is beautiful. Well, help me. Help me get to something even approximating that.
Let's go back to the old story of yoga and what the ancient Indians discovered. I do not know anything in the Indian tradition about this kind of gratitude that I'm talking about. That's my own personal thing. What the ancient tradition was that those who were passionate to come to the most essential awareness of who we are, that in order to do that, you have to purify the body so that the consciousness that comes out of that body is purified, but also refine it to the point that your consciousness is more, becomes more and more subtle.
And these are the things that you are prepared to talk about?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, well, just going back here a little bit, that what yoga is to me, this comes out of my experience in India and studying the ancient Indian and Hindu scriptures and traditions, is that yoga looks upon the body as the vehicle for enlightenment. If we're going to get to enlightenment, we have to have a vehicle, and the vehicle is the body. And so therefore, how do you take care of the vehicle so that it gets to its destination?
When you say we're going to talk about yoga, you know, the immediate thing that comes to mind are all those postures that we call yoga.
Well, that's right.
But this is not what you're talking about.
Well, that's one part of yoga. We hear a lot about yoga. It's become a fashion. It's become a fad. And most people have in mind those postures. Some of them are movements. Some of them are postures. And there are many traditions of yoga and many kinds of teachers. This is one aspect of yoga, but it's not all there is to yoga. It comes from the Sanskrit root yuk, which means the same in our language, it's the same as yoke, to yoke something.
Oh, I thought it might be yuck.
For you it's yuck. For me it's yuk, and for you it's yuck.
Okay,
and so yuk has to do with yoking, that is, like you yoke an animal to a cart, or you yoke a cart to an animal.
I get it. So that and the yoga with the postures is a way to take your body where you want it to go, and you're going to talk about some other things.
The postures that you understand as yoga is one aspect of yoga, but there's a general meaning of what yoga is and a general meaning to what a yogi is.
What's a yogi?
A yogi is somebody who practices yoga.
Oh, I might have known.
Okay. Yoga is a meditation discipline, it's a discipline of the heart, and it's also a discipline of the body. So
well,
it has many, many levels to it.
But what I'm trying to get is this sort of generic single idea that they would call all these things yoga. So to what does that refer? And you said something before that's
well,
like...
it is yoking. It is yoking the vehicle to the animal, or yoking the animal to the vehicle. It's a way of uniting. Yoking is uniting.
All right.
So uniting with one, you're uniting with the all, and this is the discipline by which you do it.
Uh-huh. And does it always refer to things that you do specifically with your body, or no? Because there's the yoga of work, you can speak about the yoga of other
things. Yes, that's right. Karma yoga, there's many different kinds of yoga.
Okay, so they're union techniques, except the one that we're most familiar with plays with the body per se.
That's right.
Okay, I got it.
In the West, we think of it as those postures. But it's anything that you do to unite with God.
Okay.
The practitioners of this in India saw the body as a vehicle, and you're yoking this vehicle to this animal, and it's going to take you to your destination, which is union with the divine. My understanding of this is, in more Western terms, is that the body is actually the unconscious. You talk about the unconscious. Well, where is the unconscious? The unconscious is actually the body. The body is the place of the unconscious. It's also the earth. You're walking around in a piece of the earth.
Yes, I like both these ideas.
And the piece of the earth is this body. When you die, it's going to return to the earth one way or another. But at this point, it is the earth,
the piece of earth,
animated as you.
Oh, I like this a lot.
Mm-hmm. And it's also seen in the tradition as the source, the place out of which your consciousness comes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the roots of your consciousness are your body.
I understand.
The question is, how can you tend these roots so that the tree, which is your consciousness, and the fully mature tree, which is your fully aware consciousness, can most thrive?
Right, and this is something you know a lot about that I know very little about.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, comes down to that.
see that the project of it is totally different from this thing that we see so much of in Los Angeles, which is to make yourself body beautiful. It's totally different, really, than just making yourself healthy. That's a side benefit of it. It is really making yourself literally a vehicle to become enlightened. Oh, making this body the vehicle which can contain enlightenment.
That's so much nicer than the sort of pumping iron thought, you know, of all that kind of stressful exercises that people do.
Yes. Well, pumping iron, of course, is not a yogic exercise. That's completely off the map.
But just that idea that we're trying to, you know, pump up our bodies as opposed to make them vehicles for the divine, pump them up in muscle mass as opposed to making them fit for highest order activity.
Well, they are, in fact, the vehicles of your consciousness, and the object is to make them a vehicle for the divine to enter in your consciousness.
Okay, so, I like it already. I do
so
like it.
This is the basic attitude towards the body, which is represented in yoga. I'm going to keep referring back to the Indian tradition, but I'm going to talk a little bit about my own way of practicing yoga in this sense. I had a dramatic conversion around all of this when I first spent a long time in India, which was from the time I was 27 to 30. And I was very unconscious of my body then. I didn't like physical exercise. At one point I went through a thing to sort of put on some weight because I was a skinny kid. Did some pumping iron at a certain point because I thought that would make me gain weight. But I didn't care about my body. I wasn't aware of it. I wasn't aware that I was a beautiful young man. I just didn't know it. When I look at my pictures, I think...
Well, that's interesting that you weren't even vain about it, considering it was lovely and you were a handsome dude. I know that.
Maybe I was vain about being handsome, but I didn't care about my body.
You liked writing on the handsomeness of it, but not about really whatever that other thing is we're now trying to see more deeply into.
And I had no sense of how what I ate might affect how my body was.
Very
and I had no sense of how the whole project of cultivating my mind had to do with cultivating, in any refined sense, my body. I mean, it was meat and potatoes. And so you feed it meat and potatoes and whatever else you want, and then you strive to improve your mind. There's no relationship between the two. That's the way I was.
This is so interesting for me, considering that I know you in a later phase. I don't know you from that phase, even though we've known each other for decades now. How interesting, because you are so conscious now, and I actually didn't know this. I didn't know this came from such a different place. I mean, it's almost hard to believe. You've metamorphosized as this being, as this aspect of yourself.
Oh, yes.
So you're a perfect person, actually, then, to really be communicative to people like me or others who are in that kind of similar position to the one you originally occupied.
Mm-hmm.
This is very good. So far, so good. I don't know. Am I going to end up going and, you know, out for a run or something when we're finished here?
Okay. Well, I don't think running is it.
Oh, okay. Well,
remember, this is a different model from that model that most people who are really into health and really into exercise, the basic thing is sort of beauty. In that realm, in this kind of thing, it's a deeper thing. It has to do with the aspiration of your consciousness. It doesn't have to do with the aspiration of your image of yourself.
Yes, well put.
It's a very different thing. So, well, there's two things that I want to talk about. One is diet, and the other is exercise.
Okay.
And of course, we know that there are many diets. I'm just amazed that all the diets are out there, and how contradictory some of the diets are. I see that somebody has just recently come out with a diet that you should eat all meat and proteins.
Oh, this is very popular now.
Yes. It's a very popular diet.
It's not too recent, but it's popular now. It's been around a while.
And then there's constantly diets coming forth. New diets. This diet, that diet, and it's very confusing. But there's another level of confusion, and that is the individual research that's done. Every time you pick up an article, there's something new about some food that they've discovered this about it, they've discovered that about it, and how to keep all of that together and how to sew it together, how to make a comprehensive picture out of it is a matter of great concern for people, especially if they want to take care of their body. So how do you find a sort of underlying principle?
And you're going to tell us this?
I'm going to tell you the underlying principle.
Oh my God.
The underlying principle is that stay close to nature. That is my underlying principle. Stay close to what nature provided you.
Okay, what does that mean?
Basically,
I'm in trouble already.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. Very basically, fruits, vegetables, nuts, grains, and seeds. And that's one aspect of the basic principle. The other basic principle is as close to its original state as possible, as little processed as possible. So these are my two guidelines.
Oh, this is, wait a minute now. Now, I understand that this may be optimum health, but there's a whole other aspect to divinely, wonderfully cooked food that you would lose in terms of...
Go back to optimal health.
Well, I mean, I understand. If your choice is...
Because that's yoga, is optimal health.
Oh,
optimal
dear.
Health, because optimal health is the possibility of optimal consciousness.
Oh, dear.
Well, that's okay. Now, Suzanne, you are a superb cook, and one of the things I love about you is sitting at your table and eating the wonderful, wonderful things that you make for me.
So you're not making any claims that you yourself, although you are very good.
Well, I'll tell you about how I am in a moment. I've kind of worked all of that out, and I think my way of doing it is quite good and worthy of a yogi. But I'm also a tantric, and a tantric, you see, yogis work towards an ideal, but tantrics work towards totality.
This is getting more interesting already.
So I'll give you the tantric diet in a little bit, but let's continue with the yogic diet.
Okay. Oh, I see. This will become more palatable.
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
life will become more palatable. Okay.
So stay close to nature. Now, there was a man called Paavo Airola who first started developing these theories about, in our time, in modern Western times. There have also been people in Switzerland. Bircher was a very important pioneer. They began to look at the fact that foods in their original state are basically more what the body wants for its optimal development and for its optimal condition. You come up with this raw versus cooked philosophy, and raw, of course, is closer to the natural state. Now, there are some things that you can't eat raw. It's hard to eat a raw potato. It's hard to eat many foods in their raw state, so some things really have to be cooked for you to be able to eat them. But by and large, things can be eaten in their whole raw state. Even juice is a very good example. Juice in its raw state, orange juice is not the same as an orange. Orange is better for you than orange juice. But orange juice is better for you than pasteurized orange juice. So each time you remove it from its natural state, it becomes less optimal. And this is a very sort of basic principle.
Is this true about orange and orange juice? Now let's rethink this as just a specific
example.
Yes,
because orange juice is too concentrated.
Really?
And really, the health practitioners that I have worked with have often suggested that when you drink juice, you should put some in your mouth and then you should swizzle it around in your mouth and mix it with saliva and then swallow that because it's too concentrated. It's just intense sugar.
See, isn't that an interesting piece of information that most people would not know?
The guiding principle is the closer it is to its natural state, the closer it is to being optimal.
Yeah.
And the further it is, you know, many processed foods have been cooked over and over and over and over in the process, and the more they're cooked, the further they are from their natural state. And so the less good they are for you. From the time I was in India to the time I was 40, I was in California and I was exposed to a lot of health food philosophies. That was from 70 to 80. And then when I turned 40, I suddenly had this message from the gods that I needed to purify my body and that I needed to take every bit of knowledge that I'd gathered over those 10 years and really radically go into a purifying state. And it was very good. It was good information from the divine because it was just before the AIDS crisis was about to begin. And I was traveling a lot to India. So from the sexual revolution and from traveling to Asia, my body was under a lot of threat.
Mm-hmm.
So the angels came forth and said, clean yourself, take care of yourself, purify yourself, really, to the cellular level.
What did you do?
Well, one of the things I did was to go into this very pure diet. I for 2 years, I ate nothing but raw food. And the other thing I'll talk about in a little while is fasting, but I'll get into that. So this basic principle is that you follow things in their most natural state. And here's the very good thing. The body really is a guide. Once the body is raised to its optimal state, it's a very, very good guide for what it needs to remain optimal. And the appetites that you develop once you've purified your body are really reliable. And so you can move into this deeper and deeper intuitive state in your body, and your body will tell you what it needs. At this point, it gives you a lot of mixed information and bad information, because some of the information that's coming is coming from bad habits. Once you purify yourself of those things, the body's appetites become a very, very good gauge of what the body actually wants. You develop this deep intuitive relationship with your body through this purification process, through this dietary purification, and then you can really eat what you like. But after you've done this purification process, this is what I've said here is very, very close to traditional yoga. And this is what yogis actually in India do. They eat very, very pure diet. So this is not just my California version of it. This is actually close to the tradition. So that's the first element, diet, and particularly a diet which is close to its natural state. So now I'm going to talk to you about the second aspect of it, which is purifying the body and keeping the body pure. And then we'll get to the tantric diet.
Well, can you make this part short so we can get to the tantric part fast?
Okay. All right. Well, this has to do with a very ancient practice in all cultures, which is called fasting.
Oh, great.
Yes. And fasting is you get to not eat at all.
You know, of course, I've been surrounded by fasters low these many years now. I'm always just in awe.
Well, actually, when you get used to it, your body starts liking it. You know, when you have that feeling after Christmas that, if I have one more thing, one more sweet thing, I just can't stand it. At that point, your body would really love to fast.
You know, I'm not sticking my nose up at this. I want you to know this is not my arrogance speaking. I'm really humbled because I really see how what a lovely thing this is and what a good result it produces.
Well, I'm glad you see that. And it is a very beautiful thing. And it is a time-honored religious practice. You know, it says in the Bible all the way through it that so-and-so went to the mountain and prayed and fasted. And in all of the old traditions, fasting is a known religious and health practice. And it's religious because you get high from it. You really do get very high from it. You have this wonderful, pure feeling in your being when you're doing it. Some of the traditions used to do water fasts, and that is a bit hard on the body. I have done that very sparingly, and I really don't like to do it. What I do is fresh juices and herb teas. And this you can do for one day. That's an excellent thing to do. And particularly after you've been gorging yourself for days, to just take one day off and have juices, it's a pleasure. I know you can't think of it. But
no, I can think of a day being pleasurable. It's like 40 starts to... I wonder.
No, never mind 40. That's...
It looks scary to me. You know, it looks scary.
Only Jesus did that one.
No, I have some friends who did that.
Well, that's true. It is scary. But let's forget about 40.
Okay.
One day is a very good one. Another excellent one is 3 days. And some people who are into fasting recommend that you only do 3-day fasts periodically, every 6 weeks or something, or every 2 months. But after 3 days, something quite amazing happens. The body starts to eat itself. And what does it eat? It eats the sick cells and it eats the fat cells. It starts eating away. So what things do you want to get rid of in your body to purify them? You want to get rid of what is weak and sick in there, and you want to get rid of what is excess and fat. And those are the things that the body begins to eat. Now, there is a story out there that the body begins to eat muscle cells, but it does not eat. This is not so. And the doctors I know who know about fasting say that this is a complete myth and it's not true. Pregnant people and people under 21 or 18 should not fast. People on diabetes should not fast, but others can. And I recommend, my favorite is a 7-day fast or a 10-day fast. I do a 10-day fast when after 7 days I feel so good from it that I want to go on for another 3 days. I do it twice a year. You can find out from Paavo Airola, P-A-A-V-O AIROLA. His books are available in most health food stores, or any book in a health food store that is about juice fasting. There are always several books. It's a pretty easy process, and I recommend it very highly. And now I'll just talk very briefly about the tantric diet. This is what I do, because I like good food, and I like food that is down the processing chain.
Thank goodness, Kevin.
Yes, well, it's partly because of your cooking that I like it so much.
Aww.
But here's what I do. I fast twice a year, once after Christmas and once in the summer. Now, in the summer, I usually do a longer fast because you get wonderful fruits and vegetables, and you can do juicing, and in the warmth, it's very pleasurable to do a fast. When you fast, you get so purified inside, you start feeling wonderful, and you love the taste of those pure juices. You cultivate your taste. Your taste becomes geared to really pure food. So usually, after a fast for a month or 2 months, I will eat very pure foods. That is largely raw, minimally cooked food. And that seems to satisfy me, but then I start degenerating. Also, I lose 10 pounds. I lose 10 pounds when I fast for 7 days or 10 days, maybe a little bit more. So I go down to 164 pounds, and then slowly I start cheating. I've built cheating into my diet.
This is sounding promising.
Now, this is the tantric diet. Okay. So you start degenerating, maybe you have a little yogurt, you have a few milk products, and then you start having maybe ice cream, and you start drinking a little coffee, and after 6 months you're degenerated to ice cream and coffee and maybe some alcohol.
This must be the phase we're in, since we were in the supermarket yesterday and I did buy chocolate malt at your suggestion.
Yes, exactly.
Chocolate malt ice cream.
That's right. So then I go into another fast, and this is what I call the tantric diet. And it allows you to go through that purifying process. It allows you to control your weight, because in those 6 months, I will put that 10 pounds back on. And then I fast again, and I lose it, and go back to the pure diet, and then my body gets to center itself.
This is a nice rhythm that you're suggesting. I understand.
This is my way of being a in the Sanskrit scriptures. This is not the tradition. Fasting is traditional, but this tantric fast is my particular version of it.
At the time of the Sanskrit folks, do you suppose they had such Julia Child wonderful deliciousness in the world? I mean, and is this why we've made a modern adaptation? Because we have all of a different menu that we're in now.
Well, we have much greater variety and abundance, but they had their less than pure foods, I'm sure. But I want to go on now to the second part of the yoga practice, my own, which is exercise. And I know this is a subject dear to your heart.
I like it almost as much as fasting.
Yes. And this is something that I've been working on you for years to do. I've not been successful, but I want to tell you that I appreciate very much the fact that my body is in such good shape because I do these exercises.
It is. I just want to give you know, the radio audience cannot see how beautiful your body is, but it is indeed a specimen.
God gave that to me, but once again, I feel, gosh, if you gave me this, God, it's certainly the least I can do to keep it tuned up so that it really is as good as you gave it to me. And I thank God for my beautiful body, and this is, once again, a way of returning my thanks. Now, I feel that everybody needs to find their own way as far as exercise is concerned. But here are a few things to look at, which are yogic. One is that you are toning your total body. Lifting weights and doing that sort of cosmetic kind of exercise is least valuable. Running does something, but it doesn't, it involve any stretching. There should be stretching, there should be aerobic element, there should be different elements in your exercise program. And it's, again, not just to look good. Looking good is a byproduct of it. My practices have allowed me to look good, but they're not really the reason that I do them. And that's something to really focus on, is what your reason is for doing it. So another element that should be there is breath. And this is why yoga is very good. Yoga itself, any kind of yogic practice.
The yoga
exercising the whole body.
Yeah, the yoga that we traditionally think of when we think of yoga, you're meaning.
That's
yoga,
right.
Yoga postures, etc.
Yes, and there are many varieties of that, and you need to find the one that suits you best. But breathing and stretching and opening, are as important as aerobics. None of them are more important than the others. So you need to find some sort of exercise pattern that has these different elements in it. In my case, I have two exercise programs. I actually have discovered a new one, which I've been doing one for 27 years, and that's the one that I call the greater path, and that is the Eureka Psychocalisthenics. That is about 18 exercises that take about 15 minutes, and there actually is a music tape that you can get from the Eureka Institute.
We'll put it on the website so people know where to go.
Okay. This is a routine of exercises that I recommend to anyone. They have breathing, they have stretching, they have all the elements in it, and you can do it rapidly enough so that you get an aerobic hit from it, too.
You know, of course, I have done this with you, so you're speaking to the radio audience about what they don't know, but I indeed have participated. These are actually doable. These are not, in fact, I wonder, even when we do these exercises, at how gentle they are. At, you know, I wonder how much good they're doing.
Well, because your model in your mind is something that is stressing your body and
yes.
forcing your body. But that isn't necessarily what exercise is. Exercise opens, it stretches, and brings breath in. These are all more important than stressing your body.
And you think that Eureka exercises actually accomplish that?
I do.
Okay. I know that they are time-honored, and I know they are done, and they've been developed by someone who had, what, a lot of sort of mystical insight into the workings.
Well, but also studied in many different traditions, studied in the Chinese tradition, in the Japanese tradition, in the Indian tradition, and he's put these together, Oscar Ichazo.
Yes, Oscar Ichazo is indeed a great sage of our time, who really does not seem to be some kind of faddish, strange, you know, how would we describe something that Oscar is not. He seems to be one of the really credible people that know something about.
Yes, he is. I've been doing, and I also want to tell you that my mother, who you know, is 93 and in great shape. She does most of these exercises. Some of them she can't do, but she does most of them, and she absolutely credits her well-being with the fact that she does these exercises.
Well, whatever got
you. And you don't have to do them every day. You just have to do them 5 days a week, any 5 days that you want. So you, again, there's this little tantric element that you allow yourself to be lazy a couple of days.
Okay, so let's just talk about your mother a minute. Anything that got your mother to where she is now, we should all be doing it. Now, how old was she when she stood in my living room in her silver sequin jumpsuit singing the blues?
She was 90.
90. Well, she was a vision. I mean, you didn't have to, you know, worry about this little old lady. She was in command.
Yes, and she was...
So if she owes this at all to her Eureka exercises, folks, get on the website and look it up.
Yes. And the other one that I want to tell you about is what I call the lesser path. And this is something that I now do every morning. It takes me 5 minutes. They're called the five Tibetan rites or the five Tibetans. And also in your health food store, you can find several books that describe these. These are supposed to be Tibetan exercises that have a very radical youthing effect. I like them because they take 5 minutes every morning. I can jump out of bed and do them immediately without even while I'm still half asleep. And by the time I'm finished, I've just woke up. So it's almost like I was still asleep while I was doing them.
Well, these have a wonderful story. I actually am familiar with these also. I'm so familiar with all these good things. It's a shame I don't really do them. But these have a very lovely, magical story about where they come from and the youthing effect of them. They have a little book that goes along with them.
Several books, but this one that you're talking about relates this story.
Yes, of where they come from and what have you. I think that's available. I don't know if you can even get that on the net. Health food stores?
Yes.
Because this is a well-known body of work as well.
And most bookstores that have a health component to them. But anyway, this is my little way of being a yogi here in the beginning of the 21st century. And I invite you, Suzanne, to really look into the basic premise, which is that our body is a vehicle of our consciousness, and if we want higher consciousness, it serves us to create a body that can contain that higher consciousness and is conducive to the higher consciousness. And this is ancient. It goes back to the very beginning of history in India, and it is the truth. And I invite you and all of your listening audience to
become yogis.
Well, I think this has actually been a wonderful educational trip that was, you know, easy to listen to, palatable, understandable, and I think full of value, actually. And all I have to do now is practice these things, practice what you're preaching. Well, okay, panel, I've got my assignment, so we all do. Now, if any of you take this to heart and get some good results, you email me now. Maybe we can shore each other up in what actually is quite doable. I appreciate all these wonderful suggestions. So thank you, panel.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Okay, over and out.
Thank you for listening to theconversation.org, making sense of these times. Now that you've heard from us, we'd love to hear from you. Click the feedback button on the show's webpage and share your thoughts. We'll be posting new shows approximately once a week. If you would like to be emailed when new shows are posted, let us know. This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org, dedicated to encouraging the awareness of ourselves as a one life and providing a meeting ground for those who share that awareness.